As we just keep our gaze to the stars, members of the University of Hawaii's Institute for Astronomy recently witnessed a far-off star being ripped apart by a supermassive black hole. Team member Benjamin Chappie spoke with the Conversation's Harrison Patino to break down the findings.
So I'm part of a team called the All Sky Automated for Supernovae, or it's called ASSASSIN. It's headed up at OSU, but there's a bunch of us around the United States and the world. We have multiple telescopes, one here in Hawaii, Texas, Chile, South Africa, and soon to be China. And so how we made this discovery is that one of our robotic telescopes, which was in South Africa, saw an increase in brightness from the center of the host galaxy of this tidal disruption event. So what a tidal disruption event is that if a star in the very center of a galaxy happens to wander too close to a supermassive black hole, so at the center of every big galaxy, like our Milky Way, there's a supermassive black hole that's a million to a billion times the mass of our sun. And so if a star happens to wander too close to that supermassive black hole, it can get literally ripped apart or sheared because the difference in gravity from the front side of the star to the back side can overwhelm the gravity of the star itself.
So from what I understand, these sorts of really massive happenings in space that astronomers are able to observe, it's not like you're getting a 4K high-definition video of it. So what exactly was your team able to observe, quote-unquote, of it?
Yeah, so it's literally just like a point in the star, a point in the sky, kind of like a star getting brighter. And then when we go to bigger telescopes after we see that in ASSASSIN, or space-based telescopes like TESS and SWIFT, that we then can get a more complete picture across frequency or color, but it's still just a point source, so it's still just a single point in the sky that's getting brighter. But we can resolve the host galaxy, so the galaxy that's in it, you can actually get a picture of that, although it's probably not the pretty pictures that you're thinking of in your head of really nearby beautiful spiral galaxies. It's actually, even the galaxy is relatively small and kind of just a smudge.
How rare are these kinds of events?
In a galaxy like our own, they'll happen about once every 10,000 years. So they're pretty rare. So you have to look at a lot of galaxies in the nearby universe to even be able to see one of these events occurring.
I don't even want to get into the probability of being able to see this event, so I'm sure it was miraculous. But how much did luck play a part in this? I understand you have a sort of a platoon of telescopes pointed at the sky, but was it just the right moment that you guys happened to check your data?
Yeah, so between our survey and other surveys that are here in Hawaii and around the world, between all of us, we've been able to find a couple of these per year. What's particularly special of this event is that when we found the event, we then realized it was in the exact patch of sky that TESS, a spacecraft, the Transit Exoplanet Explorer satellite from NASA, was looking at the same time. And they've been looking at this patch of sky for months. And to find planets, it has to take very precise measurements of how bright stars are. And so it's a very, very precise instrument that happened to be looking at the same exact part of the sky every 30 minutes for months. So that was the really lucky part about this observation, is that we discovered it and then realized that in a couple of weeks we were going to get the data download from TESS and basically see it brightening from nothing in the host galaxy.
So in terms of actually being able to observe these are pretty rare events. So I'm assuming that the actual data, or the knowledge set that we understand about these TDEs, might be somewhat limited. So what did you guys know about tidal disruption events before this discovery, and what do you think you learned from it that you guys didn't know before?
Yeah, so we're still just barely scratching the surface of these events. And each one that we discover, again, there's only a handful that have been discovered, something like 30 total candidates of all of astronomy. And most of those don't have anywhere near the observations we have on this guy. But each one is special in its own way. So we're still in the phase where we're trying to, like, you know, if you were looking at insects or something, right, we have a bunch of different types, and we're trying to still piece together exactly how they work. And so a picture is starting to emerge for all of them, but there's still a huge number of questions to be answered. Because in astronomy, typically all we get is, like, we know that it got brighter for how long it got brighter, and basically the colors of how long it got brighter. So just in those little clues, we have to piece together what's actually happening.
Now, in this release, one of your colleagues from ASSASSIN said that this is the new poster child for TDE research. You care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so just the observations that we got are unique. So most of these, it's easier to find something when it's brighter. if you can think of your daily life. And so most of the telesorption events are discovered right around peak brightness or a little bit after. So they slowly get brighter over the course of a month or 40 days, and they start to fade. So in Assassin, on this one, we discovered it very early, about 20 days before max. We were able to get spectroscopy, if you think of like Pink Floyd's album cover where you break the light into a rainbow. We basically do that on telescopes and take a picture of that rainbow. And we got that extremely early. We were able to get SWIFT observations, and SWIFT is another NASA satellite, which can get UV and X-ray observations that we can't get here on Earth. And we got that extremely early as well. And then the test data basically sees it rising from almost nothing. So the whole first part of the rise of this event, there's a huge amount of information about physically what's going on in the system that's imprinted on those observations that we just have never had before anywhere near this detail.
So this is a quote straight from you, but you said the excitement is likely to keep coming. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, so we're getting better and better at finding transients, those things that change in the sky as early as possible. TESS is now looking in the northern hemisphere. So before it was looking in the southern hemisphere last year, and this year is looking in the north, where our telescopes here in Hawaii can find them. So this particular object was too far south for basically any of our telescopes here in Hawaii to get observations of. But in the future, we'll be able to find transients that are in TESS. We're already doing that in the TESS field of view, and then get a large amount of follow-up data from telescopes right here.
I was just going to ask, did this discovery, do you think it makes finding these TDE events easier in the future, or is it still just a complete luck of the draw when you're pointing telescopes out into the galaxy?
So it makes us a little bit more confident when we find something to distinguish telesorption events from other transients. So lots of things, lots of explosions happen in galaxies. There are supernovas when stars explode. We also find those. There's also these supermassive black holes at the center of the galaxies that rip apart the star. They also eat gas and dust in their host galaxies, and those are called active galactic nuclei. And so distinguishing between when a star gets ripped apart and just accretion of gas and dust, so eating of gas and dust, has been a bit of a challenge. One of the observations that we made here using TESS is that this telesorption event is extremely smooth. It doesn't sit there and vary a whole lot. Whereas usually when a black hole eats gas and dust, it actually sits there and it can get brighter and dimmer and get brighter again. It can kind of act very chaotically. So that distinction between those two will help us distinguish between what's kind of more normal behavior for these black holes and extreme behavior like these tidal disruption events.
Well, this is all very fascinating stuff, but I'll admit it's a little terrifying, so I'm comforted that we're looking at this through the lens of a telescope billions of miles away.
Yeah, so luckily, the nearest supermassive black hole to the sun is at the center of our own galaxy, which is about 26,000 light years away. We actually can take images of stars orbiting our own supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, which has actually been done with Keck on Mauna Kea. But luckily for us, that's very far away. So that's not going to interact with our own sun. It's not going to interact with the Earth at all. So we're quite safe from supermassive black holes.
Well, at least we have that consolation. Ben, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day.
That was Benjamin Chappie of the University of Hawaii's Institute for Astronomy. He sat down with The Conversation's Harrison Patino. Chappie is part of a team that recently witnessed the immediate aftermath of a star being violently ripped apart by a supermassive black hole.